This morning we're going to be talking about partiality. There's a passage that we're going to be focusing on that gives us, a great illustration of what partiality is all about, and the way that it's referred to in the Bible as something that we need to avoid. But partiality is also something that we need to practice. It's one of those words that can have two different ideas or two different meanings, and we have to be careful about them. Whenever we fail to show partiality toward our spouse from the standpoint of forsaking all others and cleaving to them until death, then we are not being what God would have us to be. And whenever we fail to show partiality toward our family from the standpoint of caring for them, that whoever does not provide for his own has denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. There are times and areas in which we need to show partiality, and we are condemned if we do not. The Apostle Paul makes a statement with regard to himself not having a wife, that the reason he did not was because an individual who is married has divided devotion, that they must seek how to please their wife, or must seek how to please their spouse. And the Apostle Paul wanted to devote his entire life to God. Would it have been a sin to marry? No. During the early days of the church, many individuals read those verses as if Paul was saying that it was almost a failure to marry, but that's not at all the idea of God. God intends for us to marry. And God knows and recognizes and insists upon that when we do marry, that we put first and foremost just under Him, our spouse. And we are to show partiality toward them in caring for them and taking care of them. But at the same time, there is a sense in which we are not to show partiality. Not even to our spouse. Not even to our children. And it's that side of the issue of the word that we want to look at. But we need to remember that there are two sides to it. This illustration comes out of the book of Joshua, which our children, our teenagers are studying in order to get ready for LTC. And since I'm doing the questions, came across this passage, and it was interesting to me as I read it. I thought, why have I never read that like that before? And the reason is because I'm reading it from a different translation. And so I wanted us to look at that verse. But before we do that, I want you to take a look at a map. Can y'all see that? Can you see the cities? Okay. I want you to kind of get a little picture. We're looking, as you look in this direction, you're looking from the east toward the west. That's the Mediterranean Sea, the Dead Sea, and the Sea of Galilee. And so the children of Israel would have come in from this area in here and crossed the Jordan River across from the city of Jericho. And that's where they would have crossed it. To get you a perspective, from the Dead Sea to the Sea of Galilee in a straight line is about 70 miles. And if you were to figure that from a perspective of where we are, we used to always count Birmingham, or rather, since I was on the other end, we used to always count Decatur to Birmingham as 85 miles. And so it's probably in the area of Hartsel, if you know where Hartsel is, and would be about this distance that they cross. When they cross the Jordan River, they cross the Jordan River and they are outside of Jericho. Jericho's on the slope heading up, but it's still downhill from the city of Jerusalem, which is right here. And they camp in this area called Gilgal, and it's called Gilgal because of the circumcision that took place, and God rolled away the iniquity of the children of Israel as a result of that. When the Bible tells us they crossed the Jordan River, God stopped the water all the way back up to the city of Adam. And that's where Adam is. And this is where God backed the waters up and it dried out from there down to the Dead Sea in order for the children of Israel to cross over. When they crossed the Red Sea coming out of the land of Egypt, He divided the waters. But coming across the Jordan River, which was in flood stage at the time, which was about this time of year, because it's heading toward Passover. And as soon as they cross the Jordan River, they're going to celebrate the Passover. And so it's about this time of year, with all the rainfall, then they come in. If you read further in the book of Joshua, you're going to read about a city or a group of people from an area called from this area that came and deceived the children of Israel and told them that they were from a faraway country. And they came from the area of Gibeon. And this is Jericho, so this is where the children of Israel are in this area. And Gibeon is somewhere up in this area. And so they weren't very far away at all when they came and took the children of Israel. But I want you to see, have kind of a perspective with regard, especially to the crossing of the Red Sea, how far back that water was. It's no wonder that the book of Joshua will tell us that all of that nation of Canaan, all of that area of people knew about that. They knew what God did to the Jordan River in flood stage, and they were terrified of the people of Israel. But it's in connection with them crossing the Jordan River that we want to take a look. It's in Joshua chapter 5, if you want to open there. And we're going to be looking in particular at one particular verse in just a second. Don't worry about reading the gray, because when we get there, it will brighten up just like that. I forget about this slide. I don't like it because you see everything, and you're not watching it as I go through one at a time. But I decided I'd use it anyway. So Joshua chapter 5, the children of Israel cross the Jordan River, and they camp at Gilgal. And when they camp at Gilgal, that's where all of those who were born during the 40 years that they traveled in the wilderness, all the men and the boys, were circumcised. And then they waited in camp until all were healed on the 14th day of that month, which was the beginning of months, which was the first month for them. And if you remember from last week, we won't go into that detail again. That was the month Nisan. And on the 14th day of that month, they observed the Passover. On that day, or literally on the morrow, evidently on that day, on the day of the 14th, since they celebrated the Passover that evening, evidently manna came that morning, but it was the last time that it came. And the next day, there was no manna, and they never had manna again. And God provided for them to eat off of the produce of the land, just as he told them that they would do. So they've crossed the Jordan River, they've come to Gilgal, and they are now about to take the nation, or rather the nations of people that God is going to give to them in giving them their land. Joshua, while waiting, is walking, and he's near Jericho. And the Bible tells us that as he comes to Jericho, he sees a man standing with his sword drawn. And when he sees the man standing with the sword drawn, Joshua walks up to him and says, "Are you for us or are you for our enemies?" And the man who is standing, becomes obvious that he is an angel or he could be the Lord. But the one that is there that Joshua sees says this, "Neither," he replied, "but as commander of the army of the Lord, I have now come." The New International Version will read this as "neither." The New Revised Standard Version will also read this as "neither." I'm going to put up the next slide in just a second, but I want to stay here for just a second. The other translations of the Bible read it as "no." Instead of the word "neither," they will read it as "no." And some commentaries take the word "no" as a reference to Joshua's last statement. But there's a condition in the very language of the verse that lets us know that what this individual, this angel, the Lord, is saying to Joshua is neither one of those. "I am not here for you. I am not here for your enemies. I am here as the commander of the Lord's army." Now, this is where we get into the heart of what it means not to be partial. I'm not here for you, Joshua. I'm not here for your enemies. I'm here for the Lord. Now, what would have been your reaction had you been Joshua? What would have been your reaction to somebody say to you, neither one of you, I'm here for the Lord. I am here as commander of hosts for the Lord. For most of us, it would upset us. For most of us, we want people to be for us. We want people to recognize that what we say and what we do is right. And to stand for us against our enemies. Because we all know that our enemies are the ones that are in the wrong. But that's not the way it is with God. And that's not the way God would have it to be with his people. And that's not the way God would have it to be with us. And it is most certainly not the way that it is with those that serve God, as this individual is doing, who is now facing Joshua. So Joshua, on the verge of battle, asks, "You for us or you for our enemies?" And the answer that he hears is neither one. The other translations will read it like this. He said, "No, rather, I indeed come now as captain of the Lord of, or come as captain of the host of the Lord." And that's the way it reads in the New American Standard translation of the Bible, and the way it reads in most other translations. And the answer to both questions, you for us or for them? No, neither one. I come as captain of the host of the Lord. I want you to look continuing in that verse. This is in verse 14 and 15 of Joshua chapter 5. Joshua's reaction. Joshua's reaction was not to draw his own sword. Joshua's reaction was not anger. Joshua's reaction was to fall on his face. Because he understood who this was in front of him. And he understood that the message that had been given back was declaring, first and foremost and above everything else, I am for God. And I will represent God in his word and God in his truth. And Joshua then knew that he was in the presence of someone that was not just a human being. And he fell on his face and he asked the commander, "Then what is it my Lord would have me to know? What is it that my Lord has been commanded to say to me? Tell me the message." And the commander's reply, "Take off your shoes, because the ground on which you're standing is holy. You're in the presence of God. And you have come to the land of God. You have come to the land that God is giving to you and to all of your people. Recognize who you're in front of and where you are and what you are about. Take off your shoes because the land on which you are standing is holy ground." And Joshua does just that. So the question is not, is God on my side? How arrogant such a question would be. The question instead is, am I on God's side? Am I standing where God would have me to stand? Do you understand that not showing partiality means you make enemies? Do you understand that telling the truth, saying what is right and saying what is true, causes friendships to be lost? Saying what is right and saying what is true sometimes destroys family. And God knows all of that. And still God tells us to be as he presented himself to Joshua. For God and for truth. Regardless of who I have to oppose. Or regardless of who I might find myself in opposition to. Look at these books. The Bible is a book of life and of living. It tells us how God would have us to live. It tells us how God would have us to be. And in this book, God outlines for us exactly what he wants from us with regard to him and his truth. This passage in Deuteronomy chapter 1 verse 17 is the passage that Moses tells to the individuals who were chosen to be judges along with him. This passage is the one that primarily refers to the judges who are going to be making decisions with regard to other people. It applies to every individual in leadership of any kind. It applies to every individual, no matter who they are, in dealing with others. And the commandment coming from God through Moses was this: you shall not show partiality in judgment. You shall hear the small and the great alike. You shall not fear man, for the judgment is God's. The case that is too hard for you, you shall bring to me, and I will hear it. Showing no partiality, but saying what is right and saying what is true, regardless of the stature, the reputation, or the closeness of the individual in front of you. To be true to what God has said, to be true to what is right, to be true to justice, and to be true to the truth. And then in 2 Chronicles chapter 19 and verse 7. Now then, let the fear of the Lord be upon you. Be very careful what you do. For the Lord our God will have no part in unrighteousness or partiality or the taking of a bribe. Sometimes the bribe is monetary. Sometimes the bribe is friendship. Sometimes the bribe is relationship. And God would have no part in anything that deals with unrighteousness, or showing of partiality, or the taking of any bribe. And then in Proverbs it writes this: to show partiality to the wicked is not good, nor to thrust aside the righteous in judgment. The wise know that, and the wise understand that. And that's why David would talk about the individuals who would confront him, and the individuals who would confront him with things that he was doing and saying that were wrong, he considered to be his best friends, because they moved him back to what God would have him to do. They moved him back to truth. They moved him back to righteousness. And so the wisdom that God would have us to live by is to know and to understand that anytime we show partiality to the wicked, or to those that are in the wrong, to those who are not holding to what is right and true, then that is not good. And we simply cannot thrust aside the righteous, those who are doing right, those who are doing what they ought to do. Then in the book of Matthew chapter 22 verse 16, it was said, not from the heart, but it was said as something that they recognized, and that most everyone who knew him recognized, even though they were trying to trick him in the process of saying it. They gave this description of Jesus: teacher, we know that you are truthful and you teach the way of God in truth. He didn't teach his own mind. He taught what God told him to say. Teaching truth does not mean I tell you what my perception is. It means I try to tell you as best as we can what God himself says. So we know that you are truthful and you teach the way of God in truth, and you defer to no one, for you are not partial to any. There will be none of us who will be able to stand before God and say, okay, Lord, it's me. Because we will be judged on the basis of what we have done with Jesus and what he said. And there will be no partiality. That is a truth that is comforting if you're listening to Jesus. That is a truth that is sobering and terrifying if you make up your own mind about what you think God would have you to do, and you really don't pay attention to Jesus. we will be judged by what he has said. And then the passage that we started with, it was our reading. The passage where the Apostle Peter expresses this very thing when he comes to the house of Cornelius. He would not be done with the difficulties that he had in coming with the house of Cornelius. You'll have to be confronted later on by Paul in a time when Paul was being exactly what God would have us to be here, showing no partiality to the man who was the apostle before him, showing no partiality to the man who was a believer in Christ before him, showing no partiality to the individual who was considered by all of the churches to be one, if not the most outstanding apostle of Jesus Christ. And Paul stood and confronted him with no partiality and condemned him because he stood condemned, because he wasn't doing what God would have him to do when he got up from the table and would no longer eat with the Gentiles. And even on this occasion, God had to show him a vision and had to command him three times, if I call it clean, don't you call it unclean. It doesn't matter what you think or what you want. If I have called it clean, don't you dare call it unclean anymore. But after that vision, he comes, and when he hears the story of Cornelius, verse 34 and 35, as he begins to speak, he says this: I most certainly understand now that God is not one to show partiality. That's a sobering reality. That's a sobering truth. That God is not for me nor for my enemies. He's for what is right and what is true. That God is not for me, and God is not for those that I want him to destroy. God is for what is right, and he is for what is true. And so Peter says, okay, I get it now. He won't hold it, but he's got it, and he'll come back to it. I most certainly understand now that God is not one to show partiality, but in every nation, doesn't matter who they are, in every nation, the man that fears God, fears him, and does what is right, is welcome to him. We're not welcomed because we're Americans. We're not welcomed because we have the right political view. We are not welcome because we are us. We are welcome if we listen to him. We are welcome if we do what is right, because there is no partiality with God, and there is to be no partiality with us. May God help us to be the people he wants us to be, and to stand for truth, and to insist upon it, upon the others with whom we have to deal. If you're not in Christ this morning, we want to give you an opportunity to become a Christian. By being baptized into Christ, if you believe that he is the Son of the living God. Or an opportunity to come home to Christ if you need to. And if you need to respond to his invitation, we offer that invitation to you as together we stand and as we sing.